Today I'm here to present you the information security in the cloud. It's work I've done back in William & Mary with my colleague Zhang Xu and my advisor Haining Wang. So cloud computing, it's a big thing today, right? The server virtualization technology have the benefit of consolidating workload as well as simplified resource management. And it's enabling technology for the utility-based computing. And in order to achieve the goal of computing consolidation, the server virtualization technology have chosen the approach of logically separate but physically shared architecture. And of course, we know that this is not exactly equivalent to physically shared machines. And therefore, there are some non-negligible differences are expected, such as the covert channels. Well, the threat of covert channel is actually well known a long time ago. And it basically is an exploitation of the imperfections in the isolation of resources and enables communication bypassing the mandatory access controls. And on non-virtualized systems, a lot of things are found to be vulnerable to covert channel attacks, such as the file system objects, network stacks, and processor cache, input devices, etc. However, on the virtualized systems, there is no known practical exploits to date. That is until now. Well, there are some related work, previous work on this as a precautionary research. And the seminal CCS09 paper introduced constructed a covert channel on the Amazon EC2 cloud with a bandwidth of 0.02 bits per second, which is much less than the 1 bit per second recommended ratio by the Orange Book. Well, there are some follow-up researches done last year, and through some improved implementation and a systematic measurement study, they have found that the covert channel is actually could be improved to the bandwidth of 3.2 bits per second, and with 10% error rate. So, with such a low known practical bandwidths, people have tend to conclude that the covert channel can do very limited harm in the cloud. And nonetheless, the industry do have some responses. So the Amazon EC2 is known to offer the dedicated instance service, and which ensures that the tenant of this service have their own separate physical machines, hosted virtual machines. And nonetheless, it incurs a significant extra cost on that. And I've calculated that in order for a user of 20 virtual machine instances to enjoy this service, and they have to pay up to 6 times more service charge. And so it seems like they are targeting this solution to the paranoid high-end users. If you really need extra level of security, use this service. However, we want to say that covert channel attacks are real as well as practical. They're not just we're not just being paranoid. Well, here's the outline of this project. First, we're going to understand why the existing covert channels does not work. And then we go ahead and design a new covert channel specifically targeting the cross-VM communication. And then we do some realistic evaluations. So first thing first, why the existing cache covert channel does not work on the virtualized systems? Well, the classic cache covert channels is actually a hybrid timing and storage channel. And it works as following. So conceptually, a cache is being divided into multiple regions. And the receiver of the cache channel first initializes the region by accessing data and fill up the cache. And then the sender sends information by selectively accessing certain memory addresses and evicting certain regions of the cache. And then the receiver receives the message by accessing the cache again and measuring the latencies with respect to each region of the cache. And this scheme works pretty well on the hyper-threaded processors, achieving a bandwidth of 400 kilobytes per second. However, it performs really, really poorly on the virtualized environment, having a bandwidth of only on the order of 1 bit per second. And notice that 400 kilobytes is actually 3 million bits. So this 3 million to 1 reduction clearly tells us that there's something wrong. So we found out the reason of the struggling of the classic covert channel, a cache covert channel, and they are the addressing uncertainty, the scheduling uncertainty, as well as the cache physical limitation. So I won't go into too much detail in this, but I'll just introduce the idea briefly. For first thing, the addressing uncertainty. What happened here is that in order for a user-level process to precisely impact a certain regions of the cache, they have to be know the exact physical virtual memory to physical memory mapping. However, on virtualized environment, this is really, really hard, if not impossible, because it has to go through two layers of memory address translation. And each layer is actually protected by a certain privilege. For example, the address of the memory address of the user level process has to first translate into the guest physical address, which is protected by the privilege of the OS. And this guest physical address is actually not a real physical address. It's actually another virtualized address by the hypervisor. So there's another level of mapping on the hypervisor side. So it's really hard for a arbitrary process to know this mapping exactly. So the second difficulty is on the scheduling requirement. So as I have alluded in the introduction of the classic covert channel, the cache covert channel has a specific requirement on scheduling. The first, the cache has to be initialized by the receiver, and then it has to be prepared by the sender, and then it has to be detected by the receiver. And this translates to a very strict round-robin requirement. That is, the receiver has to execute immediately before the senders do, and then immediately after the senders. And in reality, this scheduling requirement is not necessarily fulfilled, and unless the hypervisor is including. So in this case, the senders could be scheduled to execute before the receiver finished preparing the cache. Therefore, the cache patterns are invalid for any data transmission. And so are the other invalid alternative scheduling. And so third, there are some certain physical limitations. And in order for a cache covert channel to work, it has to have a stably shared cache. Not only the non-participating workload on the processor could destabilize the cache, there are, on the multi-processor systems, there are many cores that reside on different physical processors, and they generally do not have any shared cache. So basically, if a sender and the receiver are executing on totally different physical processors, there's nothing they can do. There's no cache, there's no channel. Period. So we understood the difficulties of the classic covert channel, then how do we go beyond that? We'll go ahead and design a new cross-VM covert channels. First, we're going to redesign the data transmission scheme. So the classic covert channel modulates the data over the regions of the cache. However, because in a virtualized environment, we could no longer have precise control of the cache regions. So why do we continue that scheme? So I propose to use the timing-based modulation instead of state pattern-based modulation. So here is how I do it. So in order to transmit this number of bits, we instead of modulating them over the cache, different cache regions, we stretch them along the time axis. And so we know that a cache miss will yield a very high access latency, and a cache hit will yield a very low access latency. So we just designate a high cache access latency to be 1 and the low access latency to be 0. So we could transmit all these data just along over a period of time using any cache regions instead of specific cache regions. And this scheme has an additional benefit is the change of scheduling requirement. So because the signal generation and detection are now happened instantaneously, so the sender and receiver could be scheduled in any way they want. And as long as they are executing in parallel, those time periods are valid for data transmission. So we have actually constructed a L2-based cache covert channel on a virtualized system. And we have measured that we can actually transmit 190 kilobits per second. So it's not very bad. So this new design cache channel have overcome the difficulty of addressing uncertainty as well as scheduling uncertainty. However, there is this absolute barrier we could not bypass, which is the requirement of a shared cache. So because a shared cache is not really guaranteed on a virtualized systems, and also the hypervisor could arbitrarily migrate virtual processors to any physical processors. So if the sender and receiver are actually executing on a different processor, well, the receiver is going to be eternally unhappy because it could not see anything, just like a lonely star floating in the hyperspace. Well, it turns out that there is actually a way to get around that. So let's look at the detail of the hyperspace, the memory bus, which I call the fibers of the hyperspace. So we, because cache does not work anymore, we look a little bit beyond the cache, we saw the memory bus. Well, the memory bus is actually an excellent medium for cross-VM covert channel transmission, because if we could generate bus contention on the memory bus, this results a global observable phenomenon on all processor cores. Well, how do we do that? We exploit the good old atomic instructions. Well, maybe you guys have known that, but I'll just introduce it anyway. So atomic instruction is actually a specific set of x86 memory manipulation instructions. Its goal is basically ensure the operation autonomy on the memory regions. So for example, if one core assess an atomic instruction on a data region, and all other accesses to the same data region is being blocked until the atomic instruction has finished. So as simple as that. Well, it's actually very helpful for building the fundamental building blocks for thread synchronization, such as semaphore and the mutexes. And however, it's very useful for building covert channels. Well, I think it's a pretty good example of theory versus reality. So theoretically, the performance impact of atomic instructions should be very localized. So if one core assesses an atomic operation on a piece of data region, access to the same data region should be blocked. However, access to other data regions in memory should be allowed. So if everything happens this way, then the atomic instruction is not actually exploitable. However, the implementation is always different from the specification. Well, in the pre-Pentium-Pro generation of processors, the automaticity is actually implemented using the bus lock signal. So here comes the memory bus. Well, if one core assesses an atomic instruction on the memory, a global memory bus lock is asserted. So in this way, all the processor cores can observe this phenomenon, and therefore it's exploitable for the covert channels. Not only that, it actually results a very bad performance. So in the Pentium Pro to pre-Nehalem generation of processors, the engineers have actually greatly improved the bus locking scenario. It's reduced the chance of bus lock, but the possibility is not completely eliminated. So so here's the new architecture. Compared to the old one, the cache here actually plays a role in this operation. So if a target data is actually cacheable inside a single cache line, what happens is that the cache line locking is actually performed. So a signal is being broadcasted on the memory bus, which clears all the other copies of the data cached in the other caches. And autonomy is actually guaranteed by the cache coherency protocol. However, what happens is that if a memory region is actually disaligned and go across two cache lines, so because we cannot lock two cache lines at the same time, so it's always one go ahead and one after that. So the automaticity could not be guaranteed by doing the operation this way. So what happened is that the system actually reverts to the old behavior, asserting a bus lock, and which results in global observable phenomenon. So actually, in the latest generation of x86 processors, a great series of architectural revolution happened. The one thing is that the elimination of a shared memory bus. So, without a memory bus, could our memory bus covert channel continue to work? Well, surprisingly, the answer is yes. So what happened is here is that in the new architecture, there are fixed regions of memory that are associated with different physical processors served as their local memory. And each processor could also access the memory of some other processors using a high-speed interconnect. And so very similarly, when a piece of data is actually cacheable inside a single cache line, the cache locking is again performed, and a cache invalidation broadcast is being served on the interconnect. But what happened is when a data spans two cache lines, because we could not guarantee the atomicity by locking two cache lines at the same time, as well as there's no memory bus lock. There's no memory bus to lock to. So what happened is that the processor have to do much more things than a single memory bus lock. They have to go through a coordinated transaction which flushes all the in-flight memory operations. And this results in congestion on the interlock and results in global observable phenomena also. So, the irony is that even without a memory bus, the memory bus cover channel continues to work. So here are some measurement results on the Intel Core 2 architecture, as well as which is a memory shared memory bus architecture, as well as the latest Intel Xeon, which is a memory busless architecture. The cover channel both works. So having solved that, so are we done yet? It turns out not really. The space communication in general is quite hard, the hyperspace included. So here is the signal quality example I took on the MLNK2 cloud, where the orange line is the contended bus signal. The gray line is the contention-free bus signal. So what happened here is that we can see a lot of interferences. There are a lot of spikes and a lot of dips. And because of time constraint, I won't go too much in detail into that. But as we can see here, transmitting a data a signal over this very noisy channel is particularly hard. If we look at, if we zoom in into one of the regions, we can see here there are a period of time which is good for data transmission. And then here comes some random interferences by the other executing processes on the bus. So essentially, the transaction has to be broken into bits and pieces, and we have to go we have to construct a reliable communication channel over this fairly unreliable channel. So this is actually not a research problem here, but I think it's a good exploration anyway, because I want to know exactly how much we could harvest from a super high bandwidth but a super noisy channel. So, here is a list of the things I have to, at least the problems I have to solve. And first is the receiving confirmation basically tells the sender how much exactly the receiver have received. And in order to that, I do not use the explicit send and act scheme, because it also subject to the unreliable channel on the reverse side. So instead, I leverage the simultaneous receiver detection using the system-wide observable phenomena of a bus contention. So essentially, the receiver, when it operates, it also generates bus contention. So the sender can actually infer the presence of the receiver. So in order to solve the clock desynchronization problem, I used a classic solution, the self-clock coding, the differential Manchester coding, which is used in the standard token ring network. For error correction, again, I do not leverage the send and act. Instead, I use a strong forward error correction scheme, the Reed-Solomon coding scheme, which is used for optical disks and satellites. It has a very strong multi-bit error correction capability. So last but not least, I used the data framing scheme, which sends data in small fixed packets. And it improves the resilience on the interruptions of errors. So the overview of the complete protocol goes as following. First, the data block is being broken into pieces of that fixed length data, and each data is being applied the forward error correction scheme. And then the entire packet is being framed by some preamables, and then the signal is being sent through differential Manchester coding. And on the receiver side, it goes the reverse direction. So now, let's do some evaluations. So for setup, we first conduct some in-house experiment, and we use the latest memory busless architecture for our testbed. respond to respond to virtual machines. Each have a single CPU, and the sender and receiver both runs as unprivileged programs. So there's nothing special about that. So we used 32-bit data frame, which includes the 8-bit programmable, and then 24-bit payload. And the parity bit is actually 4x4. The channel capacity we have actually achieved is quite high. It's about 780 bits per second. And the error rate is reasonably low. And we then go ahead and perform experiment on the ML92 cloud. The ML92 cloud actually uses an older generation of architecture, which does have a shared memory bus. And we leverage the knowledge from the previous work and spun two physically co-resident VMs on the platform. And during our initial trial, we used quite similar protocol parameters, except it had a shorter data frame. Well, we have achieved about 300 bits per second capacity with a very low error rate. However, the achievable transmission actually degrades over a time in a fairly interesting pattern. So when we try to transmit a larger piece of data, we actually observe a three-staged phenomenon. And in the initial stage, everything is very good, 300 bits per second, and then the channel starts to degrade a little bit. And then after a certain period of time, or a certain number of bits transmission, the channel suddenly becomes really bad. The error rate grows up to 21%. And we have actually repeated this and the phenomenon confirmed. So what happened here, we guess, is due to the Zen scheduler preemption. Because the ML92 have some scheduling requirement which does not allow a virtual machine to exceed certain CPU usage. So in order to adapt to this offensive scheduling scheme, we actually tuned our protocol parameters a little bit. So we first slow down the transmission by 20%. And we increase the error correction capability by having more priority bits. And we have actually achieved a stable channel capacity of 107 bits per second. And regardless whether the hypervisor actually prints our process or not. So here is an example of the transmission in action. So we can observe that during the initial stage, the channel actually achieves about 200 bits per second transmission. And then suddenly, our sender and receiver process have depleted the scheduler's credits. And the hypervisor starts to preempt our process heavily. And then the protocol actually adapts to the scheme and detects the increased error rate and lowers the transmission rate up to down to about 20 bits per second. And then after a period of time, the scheduler periodically replenishes the scheduling credits, and we're back in action again. So how do we mitigate this kind of problem? Well, actually, there are three different approaches I think we could take. The first is the attendance side mitigation. Well, it has very limited options they can do, such as they could perform some kind of performance anomaly detection and continuously monitor the access latency. However, this incurs very high overhead as well as high false positives. On the cloud side, on the cloud provider side, they actually have much more options than the tenant. First, they could take some preventive measures, for example, such as the ML92 cloud. However, it's very effective. However, it's not very efficient. Some alternative approach I envision is the low cost placement strategy, where a certain kind of logic is being embedded into the placement of virtual machines so that an arbitrary cross-VM attack could not be launched. The cloud provider can also take some detective measures also, just like the tenants. However, it can be done much more efficiently because they have access to the hypervisor as well as the hardware. So, for example, they could discover the performance anomaly by hardware counters. such as the Bartholomew signal countries. And in addition, the hardware manufacturer can also do a lot of more things. For example, they could improve the isolation resources, which is actually a preventive measure. They could, for example, on x86 architecture, they could trap the exotic conditions of memory operation and let the OS to handle them instead of handling them in the hardware and force everyone to pay penalty. And it also could tag the request by each VM and localize the performance penalty. And it's admittedly it's a very costly solution. However, it incurs only one-time cost and could be the most efficient solutions during deployment. So in conclusion, we have proved that the covert channel attack in cloud are actually practical. We uncovered a high-speed covert channel medium, and we designed a reliable transmission protocol, and we evaluated the performance in a realistic cloud environment. And we also call for effective and efficient mitigations. And there are three avenues of approaches we have proposed: the tenant side, cloud provider side, as well as the hardware manufacturer side. And this concludes my talk, and welcome questions. Thank you.
Questions?
Hi, I'm Bill Brumley from Qualcomm. Thank you for the talk. I found it interesting. So when bus contention, I found it a really interesting avenue for realizing a side channel or a covert channel. So one of your motivations for using that covert channel was that you were faced with an insurmountable problem that was hard to get the sender and the receiver on the same core. So if I was faced with that problem, probably the simplest solution that would come to mind would be to run one sender but multiple receivers, so that the threads are spread across evenly and you have you're bound to end up on the same physical core as the sender. Could you comment on that approach and maybe why that's not feasible if it's not?
Hey, it's actually a pretty good question. So here we actually consider a practical attacking scenario instead of a experimental condition. So for example, if one of the virtual machines in the cloud have something you want to secretly transmit, but this information is only available on one of the virtual machines. So in this case, you really could not assume that there are multiple information sources you could leverage. Does that address
it? So I'm not sure it actually answered my question. So you have the one sender on one individual core, right? And your motivation for using this bus contention was that you couldn't land your receiver on the same core as that sender. So why couldn't you just run multiple receivers so that it lands on the same core as your sender?
I see. Sorry, I misunderstood your question. So yes, it's actually one feasible solution. Yes, that's correct. And I think in order to do that, the receiver would the covert channel attacker would have a much more difficulty in generating multiple instances of the virtual machine residing on the same set of physical hardware. For example, in order for us to spawn a pair of co-residing VMs on the EC2 cloud, we actually spend probably 2 days. And we generated about a couple hundred instances of the virtual machines on the EC2 cloud, so we can actually find a pair of co-resident virtual machines.
Okay, I see. That's a good answer. Thank you. I don't want to take up all your time, but one more question. So the majority of your talk was targeted toward the data cache. Did you give any consideration to the instruction cache?
To give a straight answer, no, we didn't consider the instruction cache, but I think it's going to be a good channel to exploit, but I'm not sure about the outcome. But I think it's worthwhile to try.
Okay, thank you.
Any other questions?
Okay. Thank you.
Okay, thanks.